Town Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Sal's and Watkins, Sacktown Sports, taking up to 2 p.m. We are joined by our guy, Chris Biederman of the Candlestick Chronicles and the Sacramento Bee. All guests and callers join us from the Folsom Lake Honda Hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. Chris Biederman, how are you doing? Thank you for joining us, as always, my guy.
I'm fantastic, and I appreciate you guys having me on, as always.
So let's start here. The game last night, we finally got to see the Kings face. It feels like the Kings have played the same five teams, right? This was only the second Eastern Conference team that the Kings have played besides the Cavaliers. Anything stick out to you that you saw yesterday? I haven't seen that much of Cam Thomas, even though I know the name. That guy can chuck it up. He likes to shoot the basketball. But from the Kings side, besides the Malik Monk attempted 360 layup, was there anything else that stuck out to you from the game last night?
Yeah, I think we've sort of been waiting for the Kings offense to look like more like it did last year on a consistent basis. And I think they're starting to get to that point, right? Like setting a franchise record for threes will certainly point in that direction. It seems like Keegan Murray is getting a little bit more comfortable. And obviously, you know, when Keegan gets going, that takes their offense to a completely different level. So, I think the Kings are starting to round into form. I don't know that, you know, expecting the numbers to be exactly the same as last year or improving from last year was reasonable, just because, defenses are going to adjust, and it's pretty hard to replicate having the best offensive rating in NBA history. But with Keegan Murray, you know, rounding into form, being a little bit more efficient, I would expect really good things from the Kings offense going forward. And it's been a different year for Keegan. He's taking on obviously a much larger defensive role. What he does offensively and what they're asking him to do offensively is a lot different. I was talking to a member of the coaching staff recently, and basically they pointed out to me that, like, as a rookie, they really only ask Keegan to be a spot up shooter, more or less. Right. And now obviously you guys see it. He's doing a lot more ball handling, a lot more playmaking, decision making than he did last year. And I think, you know, the increased responsibilities were on both sides of the ball were obviously a reason why he got off to such a slow start offensively. But if he rounds into form and becomes the player they envision him becoming, that takes them to a different level. Because for me, like, for the Kings to really be a true blue-blooded contender in the Western Conference, I think Keegan Murray needs to ascend to an all-star type player. With what you're getting from Malik Monk and obviously what you get from Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox, I think you need Keegan to take that leap to take some of the burden off the all-stars. So far, as we get towards, you know, Christmas and the new year, I would expect Keegan to get better, and that's obviously a good sign for the Kings.
Chris, looking at the NBA standings right now, especially in the West, I mean, there's 10 teams in the West right now that are above 500. How do you feel like the Kings are kind of positioning themselves throughout the start of this year so far? I believe this is their best start since, you know, the early 2000s, the start of season. Just what are your thoughts on how they're kind of positioned at this moment in time, fifth seed in the West?
Yeah, I think, you know, like last year as the three seed, you look at what their record was, that was probably more emblematic of what a five or six seed would be typically, you know, like given that it was just kind of a down year for the Western Conference. Right. So I did think it would be a little bit more difficult overall for the Kings this year. And given that they've had to weather more injuries, obviously, and that the West is better, I think they're showing signs that they are improving, and they do deserve, obviously, to be considered among the better teams in the Western Conference. And we'll see how it goes, right? Like, it's, I think the trade deadline is going to be fascinating. Whether or not the Kings are in the mix to dramatically improve their roster or not is going to be interesting for sure. And if they don't, is it another team in the Western Conference that's making that move for OG Anunoby or Pascal Siakam? Maybe a team in the Pacific Division potentially, right? Like, so there are a lot of variables to go moving forward, but given the way the Kings have dealt with the injuries and given the fact that the conference is overall better and given that the Kings record is better than last year, I would say that's a promising sign that this team's still on the up and up.
Talking to Chris Biederman of the Candlestick Chronicles and the Sacramento Bee. Chris, switching over to the 49ers. Look, I've already teased this in the last segment. Chris can ask you about the Seahawks game if he wants, To me, it felt like the Niners did everything we thought the Niners were going to do. I want to ask you about this, and I want to get your thoughts on this. I've been talking about this for the last couple of days because it's starting to get to the point, Chris, where if everybody is saying how disrespected somebody is, my question is he actually being disrespected, right? So Brock Purdy, every time he throws a pass, Chris, the ball is still in the air, and Niners fans and content creators, I thought he was just check down Charlie. I mean, the ball is still in the air, Chris. And you got a guy, if you actually look at this, who has gone from mystery relevant to top two and MVP odds, an MVP front runner in less than two full seasons, is he actually disrespected? Or do Niner fans just like the idea of him being disrespected from a couple talking heads like the Nick Wrights of the world who know what they're doing poking the bear? Do you actually think that Brock Purdy is still disrespected?
Yeah, I mean, I think he is by a certain, like a small contingent of the NFL punditry. Sure. Like I think, look, we all listen to podcasts and we all listen to, analysis and we read things. And there's still a certain segment, whatever size it is. I do think it's shrinking as time goes on. But there is a segment who is taking the idea that Brock Purdy is an ideal scenario with great playmakers and an ideal scheme. They're using that against him. They're taking that away from him, right? But I'll make the point over and over again, like Peyton Manning always had elite weapons. Joe Montana always had elite weapons. Tom Brady had Randy Moss and Rob Gronkowski, right? It's just all part of it. Like if you are an elite offense in the NFL, it's never going to be just a quarterback and a bunch of scrub playmakers. It's going to be a good quarterback and good playmakers and a good scheme. Like that's what you have to have to win Super Bowls in the NFL. That's what the 49ers are trying to do. And Brock Purdy is I like both things are true, right? Brock Purdy is playing at an extremely high level and he has an ideal circumstances around him. So, you know, I think it's a little ridiculous to use his playmakers against him. Like we don't talk about Joe Montana and say, well, he had Bill Walsh and Jerry Rice, so he was a little overrated, right? Ultimately, what Brock Purdy does in the playoffs and if he wins a Super Bowl or multiple Super Bowls, that's going to speak for itself.
Right.
And ultimately, that's the most important thing when it comes to the way Joe Montana got evaluated, the way Steve Young eventually got evaluated, the way Tom Brady, et cetera, right? Like it's all about winning, and winning is the most important thing. And I think people there's still a segment of people who are tied to the fact that he was the last pick in the draft, who are tied to the fact that he's not 6'4" and he doesn't have a rocket arm, but he's playing at a higher level than just about any other quarterback in the league right now. And yes, obviously he benefits from the surrounding cast, the supporting cast that he has, and Kyle Shanahan dialing up the plays, but he's good at everything the 49ers are asking him to do, right? There isn't anything that, you know, he's not holding back the 49ers offense in any way that maybe Jimmy Garoppolo was, whether it was turnover worthy plays or being unable to push the ball downfield or being unable to make plays outside the structure of the offense. Brock Purdy is really good at all of those things, and he's taken this 49ers offense to a different level. And I think people, you know, when looking at the success of the 49ers should say, yeah, Brock Purdy's a part of it. His coaching staff is obviously a part of it. His playmakers are a part of it, and it's all clicking. And it's why the 49ers are favorites to win the Super Bowl right now.
Chris, the Christian McCaffrey run was just absolutely incredible to start off that game. Sorry if this isn't, you know, really a football analytical, you know, it might be more of a rah-rah kind of question, but what does that run and, you know, Brandon Ayuk blocking downfield and Brock Purdy picking him up pretty much the second McCaffrey hit the ground, what does a run like that tell you about this team?
They're just bought in, right? Like these guys are all these guys are all in on doing whatever it takes to win a championship, right? Like these guys are all at the points in their career where they don't really care about individual accolades as much as maybe they would be if they were on worse teams, right? Like you have, you know, Brandon Ayuk's obviously trying to get paid, and
right.
But he obviously wants to win. Like the thing with Brandon Ayuk, he wants to win. Deebo Samuel wants to win. He already got paid. Trent Williams has been in the league forever. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's arguably the best left tackle we've ever seen. He just wants to win a Super Bowl, right? So George Kittle had the best from a receiving yards perspective for a tight end in 2018. He broke that record. Obviously, Travis Kelce broke it since then. But, like, these guys have all pros. They have Pro Bowls on their ledgers. Like, they just want to win Super Bowls, and they're entirely bought in on – trying to get there and do what it takes to win with those extra effort plays and supporting their teammates. And they understand how much urgency there is, because this doesn't last forever, right? Like, these guys have lived their whole lives to try to win Super Bowls, and they've been in a window now that is a small fraction of their football careers. And they're saying, look, like, we, whether it's this year, next year, the year after that, there's a very small time in your life as an NFL player where you can actively try to win Super Bowls. And the 49ers are square in the middle of that right now. And it's very clear that all their best players have an immense appreciation for that. And that's one of the reasons why the team is where it's at right now.
Chris Biederman, thank you so much for joining us. Candlestick Chronicles and the Sacramento Bee. We will talk to you again next week.
Yep, appreciate it. You guys have a good one.
All right, you too, man. Okay, got to get to a break. When we get back, continuing to talk Brock Purdy and the San Francisco 49ers. Can they be stopped? I don't think so. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
This is Sacktown Sports.
Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports, taking you up to 2 p.m. Thank you again to Chris Biederman for joining us, Candlestick Chronicles, and also the Sacramento Bee, as we talk Brock Purdy and the San Francisco 49ers. We're going to begin to talk Kings in a little bit here, around 11:30, discuss De'Aaron Fox and the role, everybody get your role on, that he's on, and the scoring that he's been doing. But Steven has been hanging out during the break and the call from Chris Biederman. So Steven wanted to talk about Brock Purdy. Steven, you're on Styles and Watkins. What you got for us?
Hey, good morning, boys. Welcome back, Chris.
Thank you.
Alan, always a pleasure. Always, my friend. So all this hate with Brock Purdy, I heard a point that was made by somebody yesterday, the day before, I can't specifically remember. What does, if we give, well, not we, I'm a Niner fan, baby, I'll give Brock Purdy all the love that he deserves. When it comes to the media and all this hate and all this stuff that he's been getting, all the flack that he's been catching, what does that say to NFL scouts? So this guy has been getting scouted for the longest time, right? Probably for the last, probably since his sophomore year, maybe junior year. I am 100% assuming at this point. So just follow me. So this guy gets scouted. He threw for over 13,000 yards throughout all 4 years at Iowa. He had good numbers. He's been getting scouted, and then he just slips through the cracks all the way down to Mr. Irrelevant. And then the Niners pick him up because, you know, we need a backup quarterback, frickin' whatever. He makes the practice squad. He starts earning his way up, starts working his way up to a starter role or to a position where he gets last year, man. He works his butt off. He gets into a position that sets him up for success last year, right? So my point is, what does this say to the entire scouting department of the NFL? Because I feel like Brock Purdy is out here just making all of these scouts look like a bunch of people who don't know what the heck they are doing. I feel like that's a pretty good point as to why he is catching a lot of this hate. I just wanted to get your guys' opinion, see what you guys thought about
right.
it. Thank you, man. Appreciate you guys.
It's a good, it's a good question, Steven, and we've definitely – I've definitely seen that. I've definitely heard that. Well, you're making scouts look like idiots. Don't right. scouts, but my question would be, don't scouts look like idiots all the time?
All the time, yeah. All the time. I mean, especially you know a quarterback.
Especially a quarterback.
An impossible. I think if anything.
You get a pass almost.
Yeah. I think if anything, to Steven's point, like it shows that quarterback evaluation is still a very imperfect science. Like I think we learn it every single year when it comes to the draft. We think player X is a can't miss prospect and player Y, you know, there's Zach Wilson goes number two and Trey Lance goes five. But yet Brock Purdy goes last in the draft. You know, I think it's really tough. And, you know, I think if anything, it definitely for sure, I think to maybe also the point Steven's trying to make is, does the fact that scouts got it wrong, that's impacting Brock Purdy's perception nationally, because scouts are still very hesitant to admit being wrong on their initial report. I think some of that plays a factor into it as well. I think the initial hate or skepticism was definitely based in that, for sure, especially NFL people. Everybody's trying to keep their job at some point as well. Nobody, you know, nobody wants to admit defeat, but no, I think that it's just really, really tough to evaluate quarterbacks. Like, we thought Trevor Lawrence was going to be an absolute can't-miss prospect, and he's been good, but he has not been Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck, Patrick Mahomes, or anything like that. It's just, the NFL is like a completely different game. Like, college football and NFL football, especially from the quarterback position, could not be any more, like, it's, again, it's completely like learning a, not a new sport, but it's just such a different level and requires such a different kind of skill set. It's really tough to try and figure out, you know, yes, you have this set of skills. You might have a body type or, you know, a specific, you know, area of the game that you excel at. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to translate one for one to the NFL. And it's just really hard, man. It's just really, really hard to evaluate quarterbacks. And also, there's like 14 good ones in the world.
Exactly. The problem is you can't answer this question and not do what I don't really love doing, right? And go to a different dimension and say, okay, what are the Texans with Brock Purdy?
Sure, right.
What are, you know what I mean? That's
how
the
big
question.
A situation as well.
So
right.
If Brock, you know what I mean? So Brock Purdy was Mr. Irrelevant.
I mean, because that's also the kind of, I mean, it's not really coming from a similar place, but that's kind of what Dan Orlovsky is saying as well, is what does Mac Jones look like in this? Like, would it, how much is nature versus nurture in the NFL?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So I don't, that's the problem. If somebody is saying, oh, well, you know what I mean? Oh, well, if they had done this or that, it would have been a different situation. So in, and honestly, even in that draft, I guess one argument would be that, okay, I'm looking in this draft right now, right? For what is this? 2022. So Aiden Hutchinson went 2 overall. Okay.
Right.
You have Trayvon Walker, who went 1 to the
Jags. Right?
To the Jags. Yeah. You have Derek Stingley, 3. So the first quarterback, there wasn't even a quarterback taken until Kenny Pickett
right.
at 20.
And that was it.
So
was
let's go through this list here. Right.
And also, to that point, last year was also a terrible quarterback class.
It was a terrible quarterback class. So, all right.
Like, horrible.
So the Texans, let's say they go with Brock Purdy at 3 instead of Derek Stingley Jr. Are the Texans just in a better spot than they would be now? I don't know, right? Because right. if we're talking about, oh, well, the scouts look dumb now.
Right.
I don't know. Let's see next. The Jets went with Sauce Gardner at 4. I think they're good with that.
Yep.
The Giants went with Kayvon Thibodeau at 5.
Yeah, he's been good.
He's been good, yeah. Right? And that was the and Daniel Jones played well last season, right. Or played well last season, and they paid him.
Right.
Would I have paid Daniel Jones? No.
No.
But they weren't in a situation. Next, okay, this is interesting. Akeem Ekwonu at 6. Would you have rather the Panthers, would they have rather taken Brock Purdy? Are the Panthers better now? I don't know. They went out and they thought they had a plan. They got Bryce Young out of Alabama the next year. They're in the middle of a rebrand or you know, a rebuild. Is Brock better than Bryce Young?
Right.
Not, probably.
I don't know.
I would
say
so.
I mean, that one's tough because it's, yeah, I don't know. Because the Panthers' weapons are just, they're terrible. I mean, they're so bad.
They're bad.
Yeah.
Evan Neal at 7, Giants again. So the Giants had 2 picks at 5 and 7.
I mean, but Brock wasn't going to go in the first round ever.
But that's what I'm saying, but I don't know. I guess my point is situations do matter.
Yeah.
And Russell Wilson dropping in the draft to the 4th round or whatever it was, third or fourth round, getting to go to a good team like the Seahawks helped.
Absolutely.
I don't know what – I think it's hard for us to – I don't think scouts are not – keeping or not giving Brock his flowers because they feel like they missed on him.
Right.
Because I don't know if to this point they actually feel like they missed on him. Because if you put, I think you cannot have this conversation without talking about some of these guys who did go higher. So Kenny Pickett, going to the Niners, right? Or some of these guys that have been taken.
And also,
any quarterback that was taken ahead of Brock in 2022. And again, it was a weak draft class. Yeah. It's not like Brock came out the draft class with Trevor Lawrence and everybody else. So I don't know. I think it's tough.
Yeah, and I think even to build on that, I don't think the scouts would have any sort of vendetta towards Brock, because it is a little bit of a everybody missed. Every single team missed. Like, even the Niners, you can't, of course, they'll gladly accept and take the credit, but like, the Niners can't flex about, oh yeah, our scouting department's crazy. We actually drafted Brock. Well, you took him last in the draft. Like, you know, anybody could have had Brock Purdy, and everybody passed on him multiple times. You can't, I don't really think any scout should have any sort of ill will towards Brock's legacy, because one, everybody was wrong. So if everybody's wrong, you're nothing special, right?
It's the same thing. We got to get to a break. Here's where it gets interesting, because you have in the third round, I would say the Atlanta Hawks going with Desmond Ritter.
Falcons.
Or the Atlanta Falcons. Maybe the Hawks. Maybe he might be better at basketball. To be
that would explain why the Falcons are so bad.
Maybe that's where you have that converse. After, you know, third round, very similar to what we were talking about when we were bringing up Halliburton, right? Once you get a little bit lower, okay, it's not as if a bunch of quarterbacks got taken before him. So you have Matt Corral, right, for a Panthers again. Yeah. So, yeah. There are some, but I do think that I don't think it's a high enough line. If Brock had went where he went and then went to the Texans and was doing this for the Texans, I think people would think a little bit differently. But he did go to one of the best teams in the league.
Right. Absolutely.
You can't ignore that.
Right.
You can't ignore that. So because of that, I think it gives scouts more coverage. Right.
Absolutely.
Than it would
if he went to
the Panthers and balled out in the seventh round. It's, wow, you guys, he is putting his team on his back.
So to like the Panthers maybe can't even say, oh, well, yeah, if we would have drafted Brock, we would have been fine, because it's like, well,
we don't know. We just don't know.
Wouldn't have. Right.
All right. Got to get to a break. When we get back, we'll keep the Brock convo going, but we are also going to start our Kings conversation. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sports. Check us out on YouTube. Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports, taking you up to 2 p.m. as we talk all things Brock Purdy. And we also begin our Kings talk, as they got a back-to-back. They got to take on the Clippers. And the Clippers, the Kings saw them after a really tough matchup with the Warriors that they ended up winning, but it took a lot out of them. It'll be a little bit more even this time, as the Clippers had to play last night as well. It was against, I believe, the Blazers.
Yeah.
But you did have to play, and they beat the Blazers. It was pretty close throughout the whole game. The Clippers ended up pulling it out. The Clippers lately kind of figuring it out a little bit. They lost to the Warriors at the end of November. Then they have now won four in a row.
Yeah, seven of the last 10.
They beat the Warriors in L.A. They beat the Nuggets. I'm not sure if Jamal played in that game, though. But they beat the Nuggets. They beat the Jazz, of course. And now they beat the Blazers. So not world beaters, but like Chris said, seven of the last 10. And now they get to take on a Kings team who should have some revenge on their mind.
I would hope so.
Let's talk about De'Aaron Fox for a second, because, look, it's been a rough go, and I don't think anybody was hoping that the Pacers necessarily lost, or that Halliburton laid an egg or anything like that, but it's been tough for Kings fans. And really, it's been tough not only because of what Halliburton's been doing, but because of the lack of coverage, as we just talked about Brock Purdy and how he might be a little bit disrespected. I would say De'Aaron Fox is, at this point, is probably more disrespected than Brock Purdy.
That's interesting. They're at similar levels. I think I don't know. I don't know if De'Aaron's disrespected. I feel like there's a good amount of the media coverage is lacking, which we've talked about before. Like the House of Highlights, the Bleacher Reports of the world definitely don't post about De'Aaron. He's going to have a 35-point game with 8 assists and, you know, a game winner or something. You'll be lucky if they throw it on because he hit the game winner, but not because he has stats. So, yeah, I mean, in that sense, it does kind of feel like they lack the media coverage. But I think a good amount of people, it's just a different kind of disrespect, I guess. I feel like people still recognize De'Aaron is a top young guard in the NBA. It's just you don't really see the amount of posts that I think you would like, as funny as 2023 of a complaint as that is. It is still something that I definitely think is real.
Yeah, and I complained about it yesterday because after he dropped, what was it, 23 in the fourth?
Right.
Bleacher Report had nothing to say. They had some stupid posts about Dylan Brooks staring at the crowd in Denver, and just nobody seemed to care, right? Nobody seemed to care. So here are the numbers for De'Aaron over his last 8 games. And this is from NBA Dunk Central. So one of those one of the random accounts.
But it has tons of, like a massive follow. One of those that always pops up on your feed. Nobody really follows, but yeah, it gets tons of engagement.
So he's gone 26 points, 36 points, 29 points, 40 points, 26 points, 30 points, 34 points, 29 points. It's one of those things where, look, we're watching a broadcast, and obviously it's our broadcast, right? Unless you're, you know, a national game. And right. They're saying, you know, Mark Jones, oh, he's an MVP candidate, but that's our team. That's our broadcast team, right? I just don't know. And look, I do think it being Sacramento has something to do with it.
For sure.
But I do think that De'Aaron is a little bit disrespected. I mean, this is a ridiculous run that he's on.
That's insane. I mean, that's absolutely insane. And to the opposing broadcast point, I did actually get the whole long story, which I'll spare everybody on the details on. But I was trying to watch the game on the flight yesterday and had to resort to some less than conventional methods to get the game on. So point is, I had to watch the Brooklyn Nets broadcast, which had Noah Eagle, Ian Eagle's son, on the broadcast. And it was a very, you know, De'Aaron Fox, not enough people talking about it, but having a sneaky good MVP case of a year. Right. And like, that's feels like where De'Aaron's at, where it is like a, you know, no one's talking about it, but he's one of the names that should, instead of being, you know, like Tyrese Halliburton's name is being thrown so fiercely into that. Like, he just is in the MVP conversation. Tyrese Halliburton is. Right. De'Aaron is a, if you're really into basketball, you probably think he should. It just doesn't feel like he's firmly in the conversation like he probably should be and like we're seeing every night. And I mean, even before he went on this run, it was incredibly obvious, more so after those two Houston games that he missed. I feel like almost instantly after that, we were talking about De'Aaron Fox's MVP case because it was so evident, even after 6 games, that he was taking this team to a different level.
He really is, man. He really is. And I get it. This is one of the golden ages, I would say, of the NBA. Yeah. There's so much to talk about. And you can become a footnote. We've talked about how it's the way he plays. Maybe it's, you know, just something about him. Maybe it's where he plays. Right. Maybe it's just all of the above. And you have to earn that respect, maybe more so than others.
Right.
And you don't come in with the same hype. And you have the Halliburtons and Halliburton's daddy. And you know what I mean? And everybody's skipping and he's doing the Dame time. And it's a little bit different, you know. And to talk about De'Aaron, if you know, hardcore Kings fans that are watching the game, De'Aaron was talking a lot of trash last night.
He
said to somebody, he said, "I'll cook you too," something like that. And then he cooked them.
He did.
Right?
But
it's the subtleties, right, that you don't really notice.
Right.
And I think you'll like this comparison. De'Aaron showboats and talks trash the way people think that Steph Curry does. Steph Curry is actually very obvious and obnoxious.
Right.
But
yes,
because Steph is soft-spoken off the court,
right,
it feels like he is soft-spoken on the court when he actually isn't. It's gotten worse in his later years, De'Aaron actually is a soft-spoken trash talker and showboater, which I
but
think
it does
we can
feel
all
like,
respect.
To your point, it does feel like during the game, it's not that way, though. It feels like during the game, he's talking trash and, yeah. and saying, nah, like, I'm nice, you're yeah. not, watch this.
Yeah.
And to your, yeah, it definitely, I do like that comparison. It feels like very much that's, you know, that's, I, and you know what? That's not going to get clicks either.
No,
that it all, like
not.
You said, it kind of all not. Plays into each
Kings
other.
Kings fans like it.
Well, it'll get clicks if those you know audience or if those curated websites mm-hmm. and social accounts are watching Kings games, which we know they're not, because yeah. that is a very clippable. That's a potential viral moment. I could see it. De'Aaron Fox calls his shot, talks trash, and then next play does exactly what he said he was going to do. That's like. That's a viral recipe right there, and yet I don't think a single media outlet posted about it. And so, yeah, I think I do like that. I think there is a little bit of a quiet perception of mm-hmm. De'Aaron Fox, but for us who watch him every game and saw him in the playoffs last year talk trash to Draymond Green, and, I mean, De'Aaron's the dude who's going to lead the team in techs every single year. He talks. He definitely talks, and it's all game, which I think is the best part about it. It's not a lot of the theatrics. It's not a lot of, you know, Patrick Mahomes, it feels like, has had a big heel turn here with doing the thing with Josh Allen at midfield the other day on Sunday. You're not going to get that from De'Aaron. Like, he's going to talk during the game, but once the game is over, you rarely or if ever hear him bringing all the on-the-floor talk and drama off the floor.
There you go. All right, 916-339-1140. Let's go to 10, who wants to be a part of the conversation. What's up, 10? You are on Styles and Watkins.
Yo, what up? But De'Aaron Fox got to talk trash, bro. He's a Call of Duty player.
He was born in it.
That's right.
That's but, hilarious.
No, keep it up. And, like, bruh, remember his hair, the Super Saiyan headband? Like, come on, show butter, man. He knows he looks good. You look fly. You play as Deion.
I feel you.
I miss it, man. I miss it so much. I miss the hair. I miss the headband. I miss it all.
Good call, Tin. Yeah, I mean, it's just a different type of swag.
Yeah,
and
right.
It's one of those things where, you know, it's actually pretty funny to what where you just left, right? We'll talk about roulette and how – oh, I'm a nice guy. Here's a tip, and I say thank you, right? And I have manners, right, to the dealer or whoever it is. Then some jerk comes in who does not care,
right?
And they say, here we go, whatever, give me this on black or whatever it is, and they right. win. They just leave. They don't tip anybody. You're thinking, hey, come on, I worked hard. I've been a nice guy. I should get some type of reward
right.
for that. And you don't.
You don't.
Right?
No.
And not to say
nice guys
finish
last.
But nice guys don't get the clicks.
Definitely. Absolutely.
They don't get the clicks,
no.
unfortunately.
No, exactly. People, that's – you literally – you stated – you laid it out without even knowing you did it. What'd you say is the thing that they posted instead of De'Aaron Fox 23 fourth quarter points?
Dylan Brooks.
Dylan Brooks. Exactly. Because they would much rather show some video of Dylan Brooks staring at – LeBron James
yeah.
for 30 seconds, then actually post about the game. Like
yeah.
for what, that's just
where we're at.
Just
right
where
now.
We're at right now, right? And to
but
your
why
point,
why not both?
He's got.
But why, that's 23 in one
yeah.
quarter.
I would argue that yeah, you could definitely have both, but for whatever reason, that's just not the media landscape that we're in now, and it's a shame because yeah, I mean, it feels like really you have. It's really sad because it does feel like you have to know ball like. Really well mm-hmm. from a national perspective to know exactly how good De'Aaron Fox is playing right now.
Yeah. Got to get to a break. When we get back, continuing to break down the Kings and thoughts on their win. Were you surprised at what you saw from the Nets? Were you surprised what you saw from the Kings setting a franchise record
Woo!
With all those three-pointers?
City of threes.
It's a make or miss league. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports, taking you up to 2 p.m. We're talking Kings. We're talking Niners. As we get ready for Kings Clippers, and the Kings will have revenge on their mind as they head to L.A. You know, what was your thoughts, Chris, on the whole idea? I know... in the Bay, Warriors have had trouble. And the lighting is different. But I think that the Warriors even struggled maybe a smidge as well, just in LA, in crypto.com. I know the Lakers have the specific lighting.
Right.
But do you think there's something to the shooting in LA, or people would say maybe it's the extracurricular activities in LA?
I'm sorry. What, the lighting? I've never heard of this. What is this?
Yeah, well, when the Lakers play specifically, they do the show type lighting, so it looks like a theater.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't, I think Brooklyn does it too.
Yeah.
To where you can't see the crowd. Now, the Clippers, they don't really do that, I don't believe, but I feel like the Warriors have had some trouble shooting. Teams seem to have a little bit of trouble shooting in LA.
Yeah, they say it messes with your depth perception. I don't know which way it messes with it. I don't know if it makes you shoot it longer. I don't know if it makes you shoot it shorter, but I have heard that it's a thing. And like it makes a little bit of sense. I mean, we're talking about, you know, when they were first unveiling the in-season tournament courts, I think it was LeBron or it might have been Grant Williams. I remember there was a couple different stories about the courts that were coming out, but these are guys that are like, I can tell that this three-point line is just a couple inches too close or too far. They can really dial it. Like they know, they're professional shooters. I mean, they understand exactly what it should feel like when they're out there. And so if any little thing throws it off, if you know, Steph Curry, I think, always talks about how, you know, he looks at the net that, you know, where the net meets the rim is where he aims in those little threadings. And so, yeah, maybe something as small as, you know, the your background, or again, your depth perception being thrown off, I could see how it would play some factor in it, because I think just in general with athletics, you know, if you can be in a flow state, that's ideal. And the second you start thinking is when you get in trouble. So if the backlighting throws you off even a little bit, I think that's definitely something that'll have some impact. I don't know if it'll be the end all be all, but you know, I definitely think it impacts it a little bit, just a little bit. Like I was thinking yesterday, they were talking about how Malik Monk was sick going into the game yesterday, and it kind of made me think about, you know, when I would play, you know, even rec league or you know, when I was a kid in middle school and you would play sick, sometimes it changes how you, sometimes for the better. I think Malik was, you could argue, better for it yesterday. It might make you play a little slower or pay a little bit more attention. You know, sometimes it can be good, sometimes it can be bad, but I just think any sort of different is probably not ideal when it comes to being a professional.
Now, speaking of the lighting and the Nets, the Kings took care of business last night.
They lit the Nets on fire.
Comes back from Vegas, double entendres, he's got puns on puns. That's what we like to see as they score 25.
Woo.
Three-pointers.
Come on.
The Nets were on fire, but the Sacramento Kings, Golden 1 Nets, not the Brooklyn Nets. Yeah. And is this one of those games where, again, I think it's not the same as we're going to see the Thunder on Thursday.
Right.
I don't think it's the same as the Thunder and the Cavs game, because those games, it kind of felt just ridiculous. And even though this felt ridiculous,
parts of yesterday felt ridiculous, yeah.
Offensively. Mm-hmm. But I think what we can take away from this is how the Kings defended.
Yeah.
Because that is specifically a team where, whether it's Dorian Finney-Smith, I'm sitting there with our guys, Brendan and Frankie, and they're just salivating over, just give us any of these guys, right, to add to the wing depth. Because just like Coach Mike Brown said, they just had a bunch of wings on that team.
Yeah.
So the fact that the Kings, where we're looking for the wings, and we'll talk about Harrison Barnes, by the way, because I know both of you weren't in. Harrison was my dog yesterday, so I'm going to take that woof woof. I'm going to take that all the way to the bank. So to see what the Kings were able to do defensively is the biggest takeaway. They're not always going to shoot like this, but maybe you got a little bit more of a pep in your step when you are defending the way that they are.
Yeah, because the funny thing is the defense, in a weird way, that first quarter, they were on fire. They came out the gates on fire, but the funny thing is they went cold for like the last 3 minutes of that first quarter, and then I think the last 3 minutes of the second quarter as well, where the Nets kind of closed it towards the half. The Kings played great defense. That's what kept them at that first quarter. When they stopped hitting their threes at a ridiculous pace, it was 21-12, it felt like, for like 3 to 4 minutes in that game. And normally, we see that be the point in time where we've seen the Kings have hot starts, but we've also seen the other team have a hot start as well. And that was good to see. That was good to see the Kings not allow the team to kind of get back into it in that moment, because, again, in the second half, it happened again where the Kings stopped hitting their perimeter jumpers and they laxed on the defense just a little bit. I mean, that was, yeah, there was a lot of things that went into it. But you see, when you stop playing defense, that's when things get scary. And that's when, even though the Kings were shooting a ridiculous percentage and were definitely on pace to break that 3-point record at halftime, the Nets, I think, were only down 11 or 9 and kept it close. And then once the Kings really locked down in that third quarter, to me, that's where the game just completely took off. And you had De'Aaron have moments. What, he got the backcourt on Cam Thomas. That was ridiculous. Up top at the top of the show, you mentioned Keegan Murray, Lockendale, Mikhail. I mean, it was incredible to see, and that's the exact kind of performance that you want to get from a night like last night. It was awesome, and it did. I think Biederman said that it was a little bit more reminiscent of that Kings team from last year. It finally felt like they were at the level offensively that they were last year, except you actually had defense on top of it as well.
And can we just have a moment of silence for the 360 layup that could have been? We were talking Brock Purdy earlier, and I know Nate probably remembers this, and Ayuk has struggled with drops, but he's been better this season, yeah. I would say. But that ridiculous, there are some plays, right? We need to make a list. We'll do it in the summer when it's a little bit slower. But a list of plays that could have been, I don't know if you ever see that 30 for 30, the best that never was.
Great one.
But the list of plays that could have been, that Brock Purdy play when he's scrambling all around the world and he finds Ayuk, and Ayuk just has butterball hands and drops the ball. And then last night, Chris, you weren't there.
Not.
You were in a plane on the way back. Chris,
I was screaming.
The electricity in the arena as they put, it must have been at least 5 passes, I think. Pass, 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 pass. And then Malik Monk just says, I'm taking the biscuit to the basket. He tries to 360 layup and put English on it, the opposite way of his momentum.
Nuts.
And it almost went in, and the whole crowd was just like, no! You talk about getting on House of Highlights and Bleacher Report. That would have been probably would have been the top play.
Everywhere. And then you throw that on top of his sick dunk, which was almost incredibly reminiscent of game one when he dunked all over Chris Dunn, had a similar cockback, just didn't have a body in front of
him. Exactly.
I don't know who it was last night, but he made a business decision I'm not going up with that one, because Malik was going to throw that one down on anybody. So, yeah, I mean, what a ridiculous. And then you got the Keegan Murray dunk at the end.
The Keegan Murray dunk on the baseline. Help me. There is a player in the NBA right now that is pretty synonymous with the 360 layup.
It used to be John Wall.
John Wall. Yeah. It is John Wall. I don't know if he's still in the league.
Technically.
It is John Wall, and he would whip it out from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
Don't cut that, Nate. But the same thing goes the way, because I know Dave is going to find that, right? But the difference for me was how aggressive Malik Monk, how aggressive the 360 was, right? I mean, that guy, I know I continue to say it as I continue to watch more and more, you know, Kings, and just get, I mean, he's my favorite player
so fun
right now so on the fun. Kings, and I don't think it's close.
No.
And maybe that's a very interesting poll as well.
Right.
Just who is your favorite player on the Kings? Because I think it is interesting. I think Fox would be the typical answer.
Sure.
But Malik Monk, when he gets off the bench, everybody is just ready to go.
Yeah.
I mean, just the electricity in the arena.
Yeah.
And we know he's going to be, he was at the first question. One of the first questions in the pregame presser to Coach Mike Brown was, is he your sixth man of the year? And he said, oh, of course.
Yeah.
It's not even
No,
close.
He's not, actually. I'm a big Jordan Clarkson guy.
I'm a big Jordan Clarkson guy. All right, got to get to a break. When we get back, we are talking Clippers coming off of back-to-back. Can the Kings take advantage and keep it rolling? And we will look down the road to the games that the Kings need to take advantage of. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.